in my coat pocket, where I kept my rebel red. Felt I was invincible, you wrapped around my head. Now different lives I lead, my body lives on lead. The last two lines may read incorrect unto said. The lead is terrible in flavor, but now you double as a paper maker. I despise you sometimes, I love to hate the fight. And you in my life is like sipping on straight glory.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor One Voice, an evening on Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at Unity Church in Portland. The One Voice event features a film screening of Unaccompanied, Alone in America, a documentary about immigrant children who have been separated from their parents while seeking refuge in the U.S., as well as performances by Jennifer Berezin and Chris Webster. This is a benefit for Immigration Counseling Service, Oregon's oldest nonprofit immigration law firm. Again, that's One Voice, Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at Unity Church, 4525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the NAACP kickoff to Black History Month on Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. at the Fort Vancouver Library in Vancouver, Washington. The NAACP kickoff to Black History Month features performances from African drummers, actors and storytellers, artist talks, a presentation by the Buffalo Soldiers of Fort Vancouver, and much more. Again, that's the NAACP kickoff to Black History on Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. at the Fort Vancouver Library, 901 C Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are tuning in to KBOO Portland 90.7, and up next is Hard Knock Radio.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, your parte chino. Check it out. Listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, this is Patrice Rushen. And whenever I'm in the Bay Area and I need good information and great radio, it's all about Hard Knock Radio.
The mind plays tricks, lick your bottom lip, taste the blood of unlearning, the agony of brain synapses snapping back in time. In time there is neither mercy nor linear progression. Lessons learned in the first years beckon tenderness of fear. Fear itself, nothing. Fear itself, the shadows that crowd. When sun comes, she comes when she thinks, drinks, dream nectar, plays pretend in the rainforest of her memory. Climbs the canopy of creation. We create universes in our wombs, are called crazy, ridiculous. Rid yourself of rationality, the hierarchy of thought. The mind plays tricks. Mind makes you sink in self-doubt. Mind helps you swim to the shoreline. Mind over matter, over and over, yet matters of matter are contested. Critical thinking, 2 degrees later and he's still blinking. How can she be so brilliant? Light beams and laugh lines. She hears voices but still can't find her car keys. Ain't it funny how she gets free?
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I wanted to dig in the crates, play a song from a good friend of ours, somebody who's no stranger to our airwaves and no stranger to the community, both in Oakland and Seattle, where we're heard, because that's where she's from as well. We're talking about Mad Lions, a.k.a. Maddie Clifford. She is not just an artist who did the song The Weapon, which we just played, but she is off the Love Child album, right? Mm-hmm. We're going way back. But she's also an educator and an activist and somebody who actually spends a lot of time with folks who society says are throwaway folks. You know, she's up in these prisons. She's with the youth, teaching them. And we're glad to spotlight her this afternoon on Hard Knock Radio. So, you know, Mad, you know, I first met you when I was up in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And you were with Canary Sing back in the day. But now it's almost like I see you all the time. And you do so much that I have to remind myself, wait a second, you know, sister actually can flow. Because you do all this activist work and education work. So let's talk a little bit about this, you know, about just the social justice activism that you've been doing as of late.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, I feel like as artists, there's this idea that we're kind of like supposed to be secluded or separated from society. But I've always been a type of person ever since I was a teenager. You know, I was really involved with different activist stuff going on in Seattle. When I moved to Oakland, I want to be part of the solution. I really learned so much. I mean, obviously, Oakland is one of the most historic, one of the most influential places in the whole entire country for activist work around social justice, racial justice, intersectional politics, things like that. And so to me, it was really important to not just like think about it in a theoretical sense. You know, I've definitely gone to school. I'm a big nerd. So I've, you know, gone to 6 years of college, but also, you know,
Mills, right? Back in the day, you was at Mills.
Yes. I went to University of Washington for my undergrad and then Mills College for my graduate degree. And but I didn't want to just be in, you know, academic settings. I really wanted to, like, you know, be in the community. And, you know, I've been living in East Oakland the whole time I've been in Oakland. And so it's a very different, you know, feel from maybe living in the West or by the lake or something like that. So I just remember working for, like, Oakland Leaf, and, like, you know, I worked for the city of Oakland as a lifeguard for one time. So just, you know, hustling and just working and grinding. And one thing I love about being here too is, like, you can really just be the type of artist you want to be, the type of person you want to be. It's a very great place to be an individual and to be unique and different.
Let me ask you this. You know, what did you get your degree in when you were at Mills, your upper graduate degree?
I got it in poetry, so I got a master's in fine arts.
You know, one of the challenges that we have in I guess I'll use the word complaint or concern, right? Is that academia tends to really position people to be insular. Like, if you're going to do the whole academic thing, you know, you'll do research. You might show up on TV with the degrees next to your name. Here's Maddie Clifford, PhD from Mills College, or she has a master's, and they'll have you speak on things. But it's the concern is that the academia and all that training is often disconnected from the lives of everyday people. You know, where you got to be published in order to survive is in academic journals that are inaccessible to the average person, very expensive if you even know what they are. And the theory is just that, theory. And so I guess the question I wanted to ask is, you know, what you went through, 6 years of school and upper degrees and all that, how much of it has been readily applicable to the day-to-day work that you do? Or is there a big hurdle or a lot that you have to translate in order to really situate yourself in a way that, you know, it's going to make sense?
That's a really good question. I think that's it's like something that I've navigated and thought about, like, basically for the past, you know, 10 years. And I think it's, you know, it's twofold. We live in a different time. You know, I think when I was growing up, like, everybody's like, go to college. And, you know, I'm both sides of my family. You know, I come from an immigrant family. I also come from, you know, like, people that were just really, like, education, stressed education. But I think we also live in a time when I graduated when the economy was in a tank, you know, so it didn't really make a difference that I had an undergraduate degree. I was still working a job. I was doing AmeriCorps, getting $5 an hour. So on the one hand, you know, as a Black woman, there are very real ramifications and very real obstacles to making a decent living. I know that if I was a white dude, I'd probably make twice as much as much I make. I've been reading articles, and it said, you know, like a person with a black person with an undergraduate degree is the same as a white person with a high school diploma. Like, and so, and I know that there were some positions that I would not have been able to acquire without a master's degree. It's frustrating because, you know, it is a lot of debt to go into. So on the one hand, it's like, okay, I knew that I needed a certain level of schooling. I think one thing that graduate school taught me, and undergrad was a little bit different, but it taught me, like, okay, how to use executive functioning skills, which have been really, really helpful for me for being my own person, for being an entrepreneur.
What do you say executive function skills? Just, what do you mean?
You know, like, I don't have, right now, I don't work 9 to 5. You know what I mean? Like, I work for myself. So being able to schedule create my own schedule. I'm a grant writer. I can get things done in a timely manner. I can take care of myself. I can do all these things that, you know, if you're punching in and punching out, or you're working for someone else, you might be expecting other people to do those things for you. And so I think that was one of the things graduate school taught me. I definitely, right away, especially at Mills, it was very separate from the community. And so right away I realized, you know, like, this is not really where I want to be. I need to be out here. You know, I moved to go to Mills, but I also moved to be in Oakland, and I don't even feel like I'm in Oakland right now. Also, as you know, an intersectional feminist, like, I, you know, we'd be sitting in these classes, and it would be mostly upper class white women, and we'd be talking, and then outside, you know, there's women like selling their bodies on International all up and down, and they look like me. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it was
the,
like,
the question would be, how does the class, when you take those classes, how do they apply that theory to the very real situation that we might see on an International?
I think sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And I think that would be the disconnect. Like, on one hand, you know, I thought about being, you know, a professor, you know, working in college. I did do a summer academic program on the UC Berkeley campus where I taught hip hop. So there's also this whole idea of, like, academia and hip hop, which is a whole nother idea. But for me, what really helped me was when I started working in juvenile hall, I have a very versatile understanding of how poetry, you know, is applicable to the everyday lives of people. And I'm able to really balance both this understanding, you know, like, I can stand in front of a group of, you know, 18-year-old, you know, men of color that grew up in the hood, and I can rap a fire verse, and they're just, all of a sudden, they're like, oh, snap. And I tell a lyrical, and they're, you know, they might be like, oh, that's not what I'm used to in the Bay. Like, this is how we rap. But, you know, at the same time, it's kind of interesting. She kind of flowed. I want to be able to flow like that. Or, and then I can also bring in Shakespeare, and I can talk about, you know, metaphor, and I can actually, I have this whole agenda in my mind, like, okay, I'm about to teach them figurative language. I'm going to teach them how to use their emotions and how to have emotional intelligence. But they don't really know that, because I'm just doing all these, like, you know, I'm scaffolding things. And just being able to be versatile, I think that's what I've gained in the past 10 years or so, is just this versatility to be able to be in academic settings. I love panels. I'll be on a panel all day. But then also be able to actually talk to people and actually put that theory into practice in the real world.
Talking with Mad Lines, local artists. And we're going to play a song, but we're going to play some of your new stuff. I'm going to come back, and we're going to continue to talk with Mad Lines.
I wanna know you,
the voodoo that you do.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanna love you.
you can freak me, cannot reach me. Deeper than an ocean, take your breath and kiss you sweetly. What exactly can you teach me? Fabrications in the fabric, peel the layers, it ain't easy. Wanna touch your brown skin, wanna be your best friend, wanna come again, so we're doing it the time way. Wanna touch your brown skin, wanna be your best friend, wanna come again, so we're doing it the time way. Went back to the queen, but it felt so good. I'm an open book, but I never looked. Flipping through the pages, but the rages, promise to get lost, loving you the sacred.
Why do you want my make you cry? Why do you need my pass you by?
If you don't catch it.
We're back here, Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you. I like that. Are you frustrated, you know, as a independent artist, right? You know, because this is you and, you know, and I guess the producer Bean One who mm-hmm. did this, right? That should have blown up. What do you think the limitations were?
Yeah, you know, I went through my periods as an artist of being like kind of like resentful or like, you know, like I know I have skill, but I think, you know, it's, you know, at the end of the day, music is a business. And, you know, unfortunately, like, especially in the United States, we're just not cultivated as artists. We're not celebrated as people that are trying to master our craft all the time. And for a long time, I was like pretty pissed about that. But then I kind of just got over it. And now more recently, I've been feeling so revived and just excited in my career, you know, because I am a musician, but I'm so many different things as well. And also there's really cool programs such as Zoo Labs, which I took part in a Zoo Labs residency in September with my bandmate, and they taught us all about like basically the business aspects of being musicians. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I was confused. Like, I'm like, how do we even make money as musicians? Like, how? Like, because people don't buy the music. It takes an arm and a leg to get anybody to pay attention. Like, even my own homies, like, you know, I just put out an EP. Even my own homies were like, oh, I hadn't a chance to listen to it. I was like, I texted it to you, bro. Like, what do I have to do? Like, but then I started to realize, okay, there's certain steps that you need to take. And, you know, now when I do something and I'm like, okay, I wish more people heard that, I just say, okay, next one, I'm going to, you know, do this and this differently. You know, you just have to learn. You have to live and learn.
Let me ask you this. You know, by the way, you know, she texts me too. And but, you know, Mad Lion's a boxer. For people who don't know, she'd be up in that gym doing all that crazy stuff. So, you know, when I seen her, I listen. I like your album, because she had that stance like, son, you listen to my album, Chatter. She had like a little fighting stance. I was like, yeah, I listened.
I ran up on him on Trader Joe's.
But let me ask you this, seriously. One of the things, you know, the music business has emphasized the commodification of expression. And sometimes expression, you know, especially when it's coming from black folks, is really informed by our collective experiences. You know, I mean, whether it's intended or not, you know, like you as a woman, you may really be a mouthpiece in reflecting the struggles and angst and triumphs of women, right? For example, you know, we're going through challenging times as black people. So what you put out there may be a reflection of that. And these things may be such that it's healing, it's informative, it is inspiring. It speaks to our mood when nothing else is. Which leads me to question, the industry is so focused on the commodification. Like, you put out an album, it needs to go through a certain trajectory. Like, we put it out, you buy it, you know, we do two quarters and then we do another album. Do you think at this point that we need to have a whole different paradigm? Like, I went into the crates and I pulled out something you did 2 or 3 years ago, but to me it's just as relevant in 2019 as it was when you first put it out. And should we really have a different understanding of how we look at music versus something where it's like, well, you did that 2 years ago, so we never checking for it again?
That's a good question. I think that for me, that's a really good compliment because I want my music to be timeless. Like I'm not like a big trend type of person. You know what I mean? Like I'm always trying to push the envelope or do something different, do something innovative. And I think, you know, I used to be, you know, again, I'm an activist, so, you know, I'm obviously, like, I'm not gung-ho for capitalism. I mean, capitalism sucks. It's not working, obviously. But at the end of the day, too, it's like we're still existing in this economic structure. And so what I realized is I have to understand economics in order to be successful as an artist. And the more that I sit here and say, like, oh, okay, like, I'm against that and I'm just over here being righteous, the worse it is for me and the harder it is for me to actually live as an artist. And now I can say I live as an artist. I teach once a week, but I live as an artist. And so for me, I think what actually needs to happen more and what I feel like has been successful, because we can look at all the things that are not working and all the ways that it can be really stressful as an artist. But what I think needs to happen is people need to, gatekeepers especially, and I'm talking about men. I mean, there is still so few women that are, you know, recording, that are like even able to be there to open doors. It's like basically any woman that you see that has, like, especially in hip hop, for example, any woman rapper, she got put on by a dude, point blank, period. Like, dudes.
But y'all didn't get put on.
No dude put me on, and that's probably why I haven't had as many plays. Like, I mean, I'm being real right now. Like, you have to be put on by a dude. And that's not something I'm saying to, like, discredit women that have been put on by dudes. That's what you got to do. Like, I mean, that's just the nature of the climate. That's the nature of the landscape of hip hop music. I mean, I don't think people understand how male dominated it is. And so it's like, you know, when you don't have support from dudes, when you don't, like, you know, it's just really, really difficult. But at the same time, you know, I think there's a lot of really great things going on. You know, Women's Audio Mission, they do this grant where they have, like, women, like, coming in and they can do a free album. I mean, those types of things, being able to do a free album, I mean, like, you don't understand how expensive it is just to put the music out there. And then people consume music differently, right? It's like, you're not going to make money off the music itself. You're going to make money off of merch or touring. That's the way you're going to make money. So you're basically creating this art that you put your love, your money, your time into, and you're essentially hoping that somebody's going to hear it. And then, you know, so it can be very, very discouraging. But programs like I mentioned, Zoo Labs and Women's Audio Mission, like, there's a lot of great people that are doing things to uphold people that maybe have a more difficult time or have a lot more obstacles in their way to getting where they need to go.
Talking with Mad Lines, you know, I want to go back to the work that you were doing in Juvenile Hall. What do you think people need to know from your experiences there in terms of the youth that you're coming across? We hear terms like school-to-prison pipeline, and many people wind up behind bars because of what happens in the educational front. We hear things about not having the family together. You know, that's the reason there's not a father in the home or the mother's not there. We hear about the war on drugs and all these isms and schisms. From your experience, what did you find is really something that we as a community need to address, you know, based upon the work that you're doing, based upon what the, you know, the folks that you see inside, what they're telling you? What do you think we need to know?
You know, I think that all of these things are contributing to the problem of mass incarceration. I specifically work in a jail. So the difference between a jail and a prison is jail, you're like awaiting trial. So it's a short-term youth detention facility. I haven't worked with adults. I've only visited one adult prison, which was in Monroe in Washington. But for me, I would say for the youth specifically, I mean, I always think about this proverb. I've said it before. I'll say it again. If the youth are not initiated into the village, they will burn it down just to feel its warmth. That's an African proverb, and I always think,
wait,
about
repeat
it.
That again. I yes. don't think people so. Heard you. Let's rewind. Okay. Rewind and say that slowly.
Okay.
So people can digest that. I mean, really, I want people to really understand the gravity of what you just said.
If the youth are not initiated into the village, they will burn it down just to feel its warmth.
That's real talk right there. So, you know, because that may speak to a lot of things. You know, we often hear folks say, well, why are these people so cold, robbing our computers, and, you know, they're just shooting people. They're not really trying to engage anymore. They're just in a different mindset. They lost. But are they really lost, or are they taking our lead?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the issues we have to do with rites of passage and you know, specifically like Black youth not having, you know, this rites of passage into adulthood. And, you know, there's all types of things. I mean, I could talk about, again, I mean, this is something that's been, people have been talking about for the past 20 years about the connection between illiteracy and incarceration. That is the number one determining factor. You know, like they talk about how they can determine how many beds they're going to build by, you know, little kids' reading scores. This is not a joke. This is not a game. Like, it's really, like, literacy is huge. And that's what really drew me to want to work there and to continue to work there, because there's nothing more beautiful than when I see a young person feel successful with writing for the first time, and they're like, oh my god, like, I got this, like, I'm actually good at something, I can express myself. You know, I think literacy also, you know, for this idea of like toxic masculinity, it's such a huge problem, and it is so undervalued as something to look at and to really be concerned with for young men of color. They have deep, rich emotional lives and capacities that are not, you know, not basically helped. Nobody's really telling them, like, okay, like, it's okay for you to cry or for you to feel these feelings, right? Bottling up inside. And then it just, obviously, I think that's the biggest threat to society, is when, you know, all this toxic masculinity that's going on, whether white man or men of color. But specifically, I think men of color, because when I see them, when I stand in front of them, I see a lot of them as warriors. And they just don't really know what they're fighting for, or they're fighting for the wrong things. And then also, you know, of course, our education system, which continues to be devalued. I mean, I would love to be an educator, but, you know, at the end of the day, I really don't want to be a full-time educator, because it's just so much work with so little pay. Like, I really don't want to live like that. Like, I want to be able to be an artist, you know, and it's so sad that, you know, I know how good I am as an educator as well. You know, it's something that I've cultivated, something that is extremely difficult to do successfully. And yet it's so undervalued. You know, teachers are just quitting left and right. And so I think that, you know, this is just having an effect on young people. Like, why would they think that education matters when they see that their teachers are stressed out, when the teachers that are teaching for the, like, these white ladies that have taught for like 1 year, they're going to East Oakland and teaching the kids that need teachers that have been teaching for 20 years, because they need that level of, you know, deep, you know, trauma informed, you know what I mean, trauma healing centered, rather, care, and they're not getting it. So,
and the nuances, like, and subtleties of just knowing the community.
Yeah, just knowing people of color. Like, you know, I remember I was working, I was just doing this after school job in my community in the Fruitvale, and there's a classroom teacher, she's a white woman, she knows Spanish, I don't know Spanish, but I know a lot about my community, I know a lot about culture, right? And I'm trying to talk to her, there's been bullying going on based on, you know, skin, based on, you know, anti-blackness, and she's looking at me like I'm speaking it like Cantonese, like has no idea what I'm talking about. I'm like, you're over here teaching basically 99% Latino students, and you don't even know what I'm talking about, like, about this level of bullying, or, you know, they're all messing with this Guatemalan kid that just got here, you know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't have any idea what I'm talking about, and yet she's like teaching. And so that's happening all over the country to young people that are just increasingly facing high levels of trauma. So that's a big problem.
What do we do then? How do we, you know, what should the community do? They're listening to this. You made mention to a few things. Let's start with that. And then I wanted you to kind of break down this term that we often hear, which is toxic masculinity, because you also get a lot of pushback on that, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you hear a lot of folks, man, that's something some white women made up, and now sisters is using it on the brothers, and this is like dividing the community, my sister. You know, I mean, and I don't say it to be facetious, but there are huge sermons, and there's some very well-known people who have positioned themselves to speak out against this. You know, and you know, oftentimes very angry. There's like a whole, I'll use the word industry, that has popped up to be anti-woman, you know? Yeah. I mean, and people are given these big platforms, and I think it goes in line with what we see from the highest offices of the land. But let's talk about this toxic masculinity. What exactly is that?
Well, basically, it's just, you know, all of the way, like, because, okay, so I use analogies around racism because for the most part, all black people agree that racism exists and agree that it is pervasive and, you know, affects every facet of our life. And unfortunately, a lot of, you know, people can't really see the nuance that there's different types of oppression that exist, and race isn't the only one, that there's also other factors. And you could argue that oppression based on sex is the oldest type of oppression that has existed on the planet. So we got a lot of things going on. But basically, toxic masculinity is this idea that there's a set of principles that men must adhere to in order to be, like, quote unquote, real men. And that a lot of these behaviors are not only, you know, dangerous to the wider society, to women and children, but also to men themselves. Everything from, you know, not showing your emotions, you know, the wide spectrum to, you know, just being overly violent, you know, like we talked about Black Panther. I think Black Panther is a great example.
The movie Black Panther.
The movie, a great example of, like, the opposite of toxic masculinity, because at the very beginning of the film, the first thing that T'Challa goes down to do is basically protect women and children, you know, save women and children. And so that's, like, the example of the opposite. But a lot of time in movies, you get a lot of toxic masculinity, kind of like. And hip hop is one of the biggest, you know, industries for that, because also the United States is such a toxic masculine, you know, country. So it makes sense that, you know, a lot of artists that are pushing, you know, rape culture, that are pushing, you know, just basically treating women like objects. Like, I got a Ferrari and I got a really beautiful woman. I mean, if you that's objectification right there. I mean, that's what.
But it sounds like what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And you tell me that there is an understanding, even if it's not articulated, that people are attracted to power, right? If I want to holler at you, I need to have material possessions, you know, if I'm younger and I don't know better. Or I need to demonstrate some sort of strength. Like, you know, I can go out here, I'm the man on the block, everybody sees me, I carry myself a certain way, I got what's going on, and people are like, who's that? Yeah. You know, the old adage, you know, people like the bad boy, right? And so it seems like where you don't have these conversations, people may just, you know, do what they think will, you know, lead them to success. So I'll be violent because I can't afford to not to show weakness. That's what you were talking about. Can't afford to be vulnerable. I remember doing workshops, and I remember there was a role play in which we show people de-escalating a situation, and we were like, okay, this man walked away from this fight and he de-escalated. What did you think? And these were like middle school kids and all these girls, and also a lot of the guys are like, he's a punk. I want to talk to him. He walked away from the fight. So, you know, so a lot of people are coming up believing like this is the only way, is to be violent and to be in control. So how do we detoxify that?
Well, three things. First, you talked about power, and power doesn't automatically have to be brute force. That's a very, like, Western concept, and that's one that's very hegemonic. And second of all, you talked about this idea of the approach, you know, hollering at women. So that's a really big thing, and actually it's been really fascinating working in juvenile hall because, you know, I started when I was 24 years old. I look kind of young already for my age. But going in there, you know, a lot of them are 18 years old. And, of course, they're first, they don't see women all the time. So they're trying to holler at me, right? I grew up with men of color constantly wasting my MF time, coming up to me, trying to holler. So everything from the spectrum of being respectful to being downright degrading and derogatory towards me. So I know how to quickly shut it down and know how to do it in a way where my life is not in danger, but also, you know, it's respectful, like, oh, I don't want to talk to you right now, I'm cool, whatever. But when I'm in juvenile hall, it's a little bit different. You know, like, I might say something like, you know, just funny, the whole class starts laughing, you know. But also I can tell that they're doing these things because they actually want to know, how do I speak to a woman? How do I speak to a woman? How do I, you know, talk to a woman that maybe, like, I know she's intelligent, I don't even know how to approach her. And then also, I feel like we forget as people you know, as Black people, that boundaries are love. So if you show, like, when I show these young people boundaries, these young men of color, these are boundaries. This is how you speak to women. This is how you do not speak to women, especially because I am in a position as your teacher and I love you and respect you. I'm giving you auntie vibes. I'm giving you motherly vibes. And this is a boundary. And a lot of people aren't giving them those boundaries. And a lot of people don't even think men of color can be sexually assaulted. They think men of color can't, you know, like, that is one of the most inhumane things that we do as a society to young men, especially young men of color. Then I want to speak to what you're saying about what women, young women might say. So just because I said that patriarchy exists, that doesn't mean that women don't uphold patriarchy. Women are the number one upholders of it because men don't have to do nothing. They can sit back and let women fight each other. This happens to me as a grown woman. I still deal with patriarchy from other women doing cruel things to me, other women, you know, snide comments, all type of stuff, because that's how oppression works. You do not, the oppressor doesn't even have to touch you. You enact the oppression on each other. So when people make those types of arguments, it's very problematic because that's assuming that, you know, the those that are oppressed and those are the, that are most affected by patriarchy are not, you know, internalizing it, right? And then also, you know, I think that as a community for Black people specifically, we need to take a very long, hard look at how Black women are impacted. And I think that we have this really, you know, horrible misconception about, like, you know, white women being, you know, the face of feminism. But at the end of the day, first of all, that's a very, you know, United States centric idea. We want to have a global perspective. Most women in the world are not white women. So white women do not control, they're not the central of the movement. And it's really saddening too, because it's like, there's been like, what, 40 years of discussion about intersectionality. And a lot of Black people, particularly Black men, have very little understanding of it. And it's, and that just goes to show how powerful, you know, the oppressive forces have been in, you know, confusing us. Again, the second leading cause of death of Black women is being killed by an intimate partner, unfortunately. And this is, I think it's ages between, you know, 18 and 24 or something like that. This is a big problem. We just got, you know, Mute R. Kelly. We got this, you know, R. Kelly show coming out and stuff. Like, thankfully, things are being talked about with Me Too, but we still have a really long way to go, especially in hip hop.
Real talk. You know, we covered a lot of ground with Mad Lines.
You know,
I appreciate it. And I hope people are hearing what you're saying. You know, we're running out of time, but I want to play a couple of songs off your new album. Yeah. You talked about earlier that you, you know, like, you like to experiment, you like to really go deep. So we were playing stuff off the Love Child EP from back in the days, which had a reggae vibe. And now you kind of have a whole different thing. Yeah. So talk a little bit about this project. You know, it's like two EPs, The Body and the Mind, or The Mind and the Body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's play a couple of cuts back to back so people can get a flavor of it.
Sure. Yeah. So this is a group called Free. So it's myself as well as my producer. Her name is, she goes by Zoa or Allie Howard. She's an incredible producer. She has lots of styles, a lot of versatility. And basically, we call it Goddess Trap. It's a combination of some trap influences as well as indie rock. And, you know, we're about to put out The Spirit, so stay tuned. We're called Free FR333.
So Free FR33. You're all producing it? Who produces?
The producer is Ali. So it's, the duo is myself as the vocalist and then my producer, Ali. So she's a Black woman producer. She's dope.
I seen you all for the first time when there was a tribute to Lauryn Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's when I was like, whoa, what's going on here, right? Yeah. So I tell you what, you know, I want you to pick a couple of cuts, two cuts. Let's play it back to back and tell people what you want them to get out of these cuts.
Okay, yeah. So I think I would want to do The Pacific from The Mind.
I like that one.
Yeah, that one's got like a really cool samples, like African drums, and it's really just about like this grind and vibing and just like really moving forward and getting your mind right, very calm. And then the second one, there's a lot of explicit language on this one because it's about the body, and I really just went there.
Well, you know,
Ryan Nicole?
Oh, yeah, let's do the one with Ryan.
Okay.
Because the body one, you know, we're going to be editing all day.
I know.
But I like the fact that you got Ryan Nicole up in there. She's tight.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, that's like a dream come true for me. I mean, she's one of my favorite lyricists of all time from Oakland. And this song is, what's it called? Gut feeling. And that's, it's right, all about feeling, your intuition. And so, like, using your body to basically tell you a lot of different things. And just the magic of being a Black woman, basically.
So it's off the EP, The Mind, the other EP, The Body. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go back to back. As we are wrapping things up with Mad Lines, a.k.a. Matty Clifford.
Yeah. I know I need this cabbage capital, but I ain't trying to be average, not at all. I don't know about y'all, but my back's against the wall. And if I fall, I know I'ma get up and handle my business with the quickness you witness. I'm lifted, I'm moving past material gains. I'll change your restraint. You can miss me with the silly, I'm moving swift. Really too filthy, but I'm clean. Baptized in holy waters, life and promises lawless. You can talk with God, she won't think you swear. Please try not to stare. I know I'm hypnotic, mysterious math. And guess I got ass. Stay out here trying to make a pass, trying to touch down. My spaceship already landed, I'm stranded, dancing and romancing. So don't front. Take a drag from the blunt and pass it to a low one. Low one, low one, low one. I got this small, small ride and I'm on my way. Jah is my guide, man, I care what you say. Man, I care what you say, man, I care what you say. I got this small, small ride, man, I care what you say. I got this floating, lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific. Floating, lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific. Floating, lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific. Floating, lifted in the deepest part of the Pacific. Yeah, yeah, I got a gut feeling. Call it women's intuition. Say I'm tripping. I'm seeking visions with my power, with precision. The cosmos got a dialect, it's in my bones. Rosetta Stone, you punks, copycatting off. It's how you come across. I floss, assume me. I shine like my name is Ruby Bridges. First one in the trenches. First one on the front line. Ain't nothing to investigate. Clairvoyant state. Got a lot on my plate. At least I'm at the table now. Don't ask me how. I was famished for a while. Hungry, you could see my reds. Vultures circling like they had dibs. Funny how they trick us into questioning our gifts. So scientific that it's spiritual. How our bodies speak in scripture. Wish I could paint a pretty picture. But the truth is the real elixir. Yeah, yeah. And these feelings don't lie, let me testify. And these feelings don't lie, let me testify. And these feelings don't lie, so let me testify. Let me. And these feelings don't lie, let me testify. And these feelings don't lie, let me testify. And these feelings don't lie, so let me testify. Let me. First up, at my altar on the call. I ain't worried about perception, I ain't stressing all of y'all. It's deception you suggesting, I ain't present with the gift. Got the spirit of discernment, how I'm riding with a lift. Like four tires on the hill, like Red Bull on Alaska up in Denver, how you feel? Altitude has got you ill, but I'm calm and breathing good. Suffocate me with the I wish a nigga would. If you will, if you please, back up off these double seats. Cause I read you from the door, got that energy. Suck a pistol, suck your blood, I suck a sucker free. No sycophants with syllabans, no cinnamon surrounding me. Hey, so where you run to? Don't make me call my cuz, the bruhs will run through. Learn to battle from the herd, your word is Sun Tzu. Evil schemes all in my dreams, don't make them come true. And these feelings don't lie, let me testify. And these feelings don't lie, let me testify. And these feelings don't lie,
so we're back here, Davey D, Hard Knock Radio. Listening to that last song, Gut Feeling, with Ryan Nicole. Having a long conversation this afternoon with local artist, activist, entrepreneur, educator. Her name is Mad Lines. You know, I'm glad we covered all these topics. But as we get ready to roll out, how can people get a hold of your EP and what's the next steps?
You could just get a hold of me. Like, I'm on Instagram, mad.lines. That's kind of a good place because I have all my websites and stuff on there. Free. Again, we're on all, you know, music platforms, iTunes, everything. It's FR333, but it's pronounced free. So if you want to hear some of the songs from that, those couple projects. And then, we're going to be coming out with The Body soon. Some
The Spirit.
Videos. sorry, the spirit, rather. Mind, body, spirit connection. And then, yeah, we got shows coming up. We're going to do a show at the Catalyst in Santa Cruz. And then we're going to have a show at Starline. But, yeah, you can follow us on Instagram, too. And just keep up to date.
Spell the name one more time as we head out.
FR333.
So it's FR333.
Yes.
That's there you have it. Or you can look up Madeline. She's all up online. Look up for the Love Child, that first EP. And look for you in the community. She is out here doing things. We appreciate you making that important connection between art and activism and really walking the walk and talking the talk, or talking the talk and walking the walk, you know, walking like you're talking.
Right.
In the words of that great philosophical group called Migos, walking like I'm talking. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else you just imitation. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right. Feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every knob just think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat to the belly from the steel gray beef. Say please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to the lovers I made with a beast. Made a some shade on the name and the street. It ain't David D.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
West Coast.
Operation Shutdown. As government offices shut their doors and government workers continue to work despite no paychecks for weeks, the U.S. government shutdown marches on. If ever there was an opportunity to show the sharp divisions between workers and the wealthy elites, here it is. Many federal workers fancy themselves as middle class. But if someone is one paycheck away from disaster, he or she is actually working class. The high end, perhaps, but still working class. The present cabinet is composed of men who are among the wealthiest in history. Remember former Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson, who briefly warmed the seat of Secretary of State? He led Exxon during its most lucrative era in modern history. In mid-2014, ExxonMobil had a market value of over $422 billion. Do you think men like this know about rent, groceries, or gas prices? Do you think Trump does? The truth is, they live in mostly different worlds. Federal workers are pawns on the chessboard of life. They work for the government, yes, but the present government doesn't work for them. They are ultimately expendable. The rich have purchased their government, and it works for them. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
You say you mean good for me, but you don't do it. You say you have a plan, but you just don't go through with it. You say you know the way to go, and I should follow. But all of your empty promises leave me hollow. And oh,
like you said you could. Oh, say, can you see? You'll say that I'm wrong and there'll be quiet consequences too. But I know my rights, babe. There'll be no law abridging the freedom of my speech or the right for me to petition for remedy of grievances. You lied to me repeatedly.
Radio, east, west, north, south, conectados, every set, every hood, barrio to barrio, y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs, one love, we know where y'all at, Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, rah, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Thank you.
K-Boot Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd at the Milagro Theater in Portland. La Segua is a Central American cautionary folktale of a young, beautiful woman whom philandering men encounter on their way back home. Her beauty decays into a horror that drives the men mad. The play tells the story of a beautiful woman who was haunted by the specter of La Segua and takes a hard look at Costa Rican values, including ambition, hypocrisy, and follows themes of machismo, vanity, and narcissism. Again, that's La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Real Music Film Festival through February 16th at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. On Thursday, January 31st, the Real Music Festival will screen the documentary Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band. This film investigates the history and present-day atmosphere of this special art form. Again, that's the Real Music Film Festival showing Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band on Thursday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Whitsell Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey, KBOO Portland, 8 o'clock, almost straight up and down here for you at 90.7 FM here in Portland, 100.7, oh no, nostalgic for the old 100.7 translator, but no, 91.9 FM in Hood River, Columbia Gorge, Philomath, Corvallis, Albany. Hello to you all at 104.3 FM and worldwide. You are in tune at www.kboo.fm, no matter where you're listening from. Welcome, time now for another edition of Drinking from Puddles. I'm Brandon. I'll be here till 10 o'clock here. And we got some music, old, new, whatnot. And we're going to start things off with something that I played quite a bit when it came out way back in 2018. we're going to hear it again nonetheless. It's by Peter Newton. It's a piece called Quarter Moon.